Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Glad to have you listening today. And if you just tuned in, you missed my earlier conversation with Bill and Pam Farrell. We talked about the importance of cultivating friendship and marriage. You think it's not possible? Well, it is, and it's actually very important to do. Really makes the difference, breaks the difference between thriving in marriage and just getting through the day. And so often, marriages end when they don't have to. It's because we let go of just cultivating friendship, of paying attention to things that matter. So if you're in that place and you need some new information, new ideas on how to move towards your spouse, that podcast will be up in a little bit on our website at myfaithradio.com. So now we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about emotions, specifically anger. You know, sometimes we get so stirred up that our emotions actually seem to jump ahead of our ability to reason, and we find ourselves reacting in ways that are out of character for us. And the thing is, the more often we let ourselves go there and overreact and let our emotions dictate our responses, the more often those dreaded reactions will become normal for us. And so for this first half hour of today's show, I'm going to play clips from a previous interview that I did with Dr. Greg Smalley on something called the amygdala hijack. And it's so interesting. It's something that happens to us physiologically when we have a flight or fight response. But how we manage it is what really matters. Maybe you've heard the term, she blew a gasket or he lost his cool. This is what happens when our emotions take over. And you wouldn't believe it. You'll hear Greg say this, but we actually lose IQ points when our emotions upstage and we have a hijack like this. And what we do with that amygdala hijack makes all the difference in the world. So I don't want to waste another moment. Let's hear Greg define what the amygdala hijack is and why it matters.
What kind of person are you? Would you wait in the line? Are you one of those people that want to sneak by and go all the way down the empty lane and then sneak in? You know, there's got to be some way to diagnose or
exactly.
Just to see what kind of person are you?
Yeah.
Are you a line waiter? Or are you just
or does the world revolve around you?
Yeah. You're sort of running this informal
I would be the one in the line, but I wouldn't be praying for that person speeding up. I'd be grumbling about him. That's for sure.
But do you see though, but that's in those moments, it's hitting us in a certain way.
Yeah.
And it's feeling, we're feeling, whatever the emotion is, see what's happening though is your brain is taking over. So can I explain what this, we're saying this word, and by the way, I did not coin the term amygdala hijack.
Oh,
so
you didn't, okay.
A guy named Daniel Goldman, I think, he's written a lot around in emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it first appeared, but I love it. So here's what this is, okay? So just real simple. Okay, so your brain. In the lower back part of your brain, literally about the size of walnuts, two little walnut-sized shaped part of your brain. It's called the amygdala. Now, the way that God designed us is he made this thing work really interesting, okay? So you've basically two parts of your brain. You've got a rational part of your brain. It's called the prefrontal cortex. It's in the front part of your brain. That's where you make wise decisions. As a matter of fact, when we talk about teenagers, you know, your prefrontal cortex actually doesn't fully develop until you're, 25 it is a guy at 51, but that's the rational part of our brain, how you make good decisions. But the problem is that we've got this amygdala, that's the emotional part of our brain. And so as information goes into your brain, before you can kind of figure out what should I do with this information? See, if it's got this emotional component, your amygdala will hijack some of that information And that's the fight or flight center of your brain.
Hmm.
And so, wow. for example, so if you're, you know, I remember one time Aaron and I were working out, in the grass around our house. So we're just kind of, it was overgrown parts. We're just, she has a hoe and she's just kind of going at all these weeds and I'm doing something over here. And all of a sudden I hear her scream and I just see this hoe just start raining down. And she's going, die, die. And so, I mean, she's just going at this thing. And so I'm just intrigued going, what is, I mean, she like, I mean, just 20 times in the matter of seconds. And so as I walk up, well, it was a snake.
Hmm.
And she hates snakes. And see, that's the amygdala. So she saw that snake and the amygdala is what jumps into motion. And so you fight or flight. So she was not running away, fighting. She was fighting back. And so, I'm like, honey, what's going on? And she was just in this state. So she kind of turns around and the snake, the piece of it's on the hoe, and she kind of whips it at me and it's, you know, right by me. And she made me take the head and put it on a little stake there in the grass so that other snakes would know not to come around. But anyway, what could happen? So maybe you're walking and you see what appears like a snake. And so you jump back or whatever, you start hoeing the thing. And then as you really look closer, you realize that it's just a garden hose, wrapped up. That's the problem is that our emotional part of our brain processes information 250 times faster.
Wow.
Than the rational part of your brain.
Which can be scary.
Yeah. So as you're, you know, like for these people sitting in that long traffic line, you know, as people, you know, didn't want to wait in the line and ran all the way down the other side. See, it's that amygdala that hits and it causes them to wave with certain fingers and you know, shout things I'm not sure would have, you know, been out of the Bible. That's what's happening. So literally what causes us to have those reactions, you know, based on what someone does, maybe it's in a marriage or it's at work or you're driving down the road. I mean, road rage.
Yeah,
is that not the saddest thing to hear?
Absolutely. And you sure see it as an accumulation of the stress that they're under, and that one thing is enough, and it seems like their emotions take over.
Yeah, it does. And that's so you know, maybe what we can do with this information is I think it's good to just to start to put a name to it.
Yeah.
And you, most people won't forget the word amygdala
hijack.
I don't even know how to spell it. It's just one a big fancy word.
Makes but it
I like
sound
saying
smart,
it
though.
Amygdala. Actually, if you said it like it's spelled, you would come up with Amy Gadala.
So that's how I'm going to
I have
it now.
Amy Gadala hijack. So the amygdala. But I'm telling you, within relationships, boy, if we can just understand what really is going on, that does begin to give us another option. Because ultimately what we're going to talk about today is what do we do?
Yeah.
So let's break this thing down even more. But then ultimately, you know, how do I keep that from happening? Because the good news is you can.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this qualifies as an amygdala hijack, but I remember back in that time that I've referred to on the show many times when we were in that stretch where Kev was working impossible hours. I mean, for over 2 years. So he was very disengaged. It was a hard, hard time. And I tried in every which way I know to communicate. And I think I'm a decent communicator. Wasn't going in. And he was leaving for the umpteenth time. And I think my emotions, you know, took over. And I laugh about it now, but I stomped my foot. I pounded my fist on the counter and I said, "Don't leave, you stupid, stupid man."
Hello, amygdala. Welcome to the party.
Does that qualify?
I'm going to go with, yeah. but seriously though, so think about that, okay? That's a great example. That's not who you are.
No.
I've known you now for a while.
I'm pretty stable.
You are. You're stable. I mean, that's not your heart. We don't want to react that way. When someone's passing us by and we're waiting in this long line of traffic, we're not the kind of people that, you know, they want to ram our car into them. That's not who we are. And that's a part of the problem is that when that amygdala gets triggered, we end up doing things and saying things that we later regret. So what do we do about it? That's what we're going to talk about today.
And the good news is there is something you can do about it. And this is good news as well, is you are not at the mercy of this amygdala hijack. It's part of our brain wiring. There's a reason for it. In this next clip, Greg is going to explain that, God has a purpose for giving us this amygdala, and we're not at the mercy of it, but it does matter how we respond. Let's keep listening.
If you encounter a growling dog, the worst thing is if we didn't have that amygdala to go, oh, wow,
puppy.
How cute. Yeah, let me
nice
pet that dog. What happened to my fingers? Where did they just go? You know, I mean, so this is a good thing. The problem is that over time, that amygdala also is going to store memory that was maybe from trauma or from a bad experience. And thus we become very sensitive, hypersensitive to certain things, to where when information comes into your brain, if your amygdala perceives it like, whoa, hey, we've been through this before and that was really bad. You need to do something. You need to get out of there. You need to fight back. I mean, that's the problem with our amygdala. You know, in Proverbs 14:17, it says a quick-tempered person does foolish things. Hmm. And so it's the amygdala being hijacked is not a bad thing. The problem is based then on how we react. So that reaction is either going to be a fight or flight. So you were talking about your story with Kevin. So, you know, in that moment, see, there's nothing wrong with your amygdala getting triggered. It's the problem is how we end up handling that situation.
So we're not,
can be the problem.
We're not totally then at the mercy of our reaction. I think so, you know, especially in this entitlement society, we can just say, you know, something took over. And I think that is true to a degree. But we're really not at the mercy of how we react, are we?
We're not. Now, honestly, okay, so let's be honest. Okay, when those buttons get triggered, so when that amygdala gets triggered, it's the reactions often are so quick, so knee-jerk, that the challenge is, can we learn to train ourselves to try to widen that gap of time? You know, before when I'm stirred up and now I'm doing something, that's the spot where we have choice and we can jump in and do something differently. And you know, it's interesting. Listen to this. Okay, so studies have found that you can be in this amygdala hijack for a total of 18 minutes. So I mean, think about that. You can be stirred up for 18 minutes and you're not able to think rationally for those 18 minutes. Literally, there's no ability to rely on intelligence or reasoning when you're truly in that amygdala hijack.
Wow, that's scary.
That's why we're talking about this today. They say it's like losing 10 to 15 IQ points temporarily. It explains that what was I thinking phenomenon. And I can't afford to lose 10 to 15 IQ points. You can.
Oh, you're so okay? Silly.
But
Dr.
you know what
Greg.
I'm saying? I mean, yeah. So, I mean, mm-hmm. The truth is, though, that's where we get that. Mm. Why did I just say that or do that or behave that way? That's the amygdala hijack that's taken over, and you're just not rationally processing this information.
Okay, so there are degrees of that. Why did I call my husband a stupid, stupid man? But somebody else is going, why did I pull the trigger? Why are there such varying degrees of this response? Is that what happens in your daily life leading up to that point?
Yeah, you know, so take a person that has felt for the course of their life they constantly are being disrespected. So let's say there's a guy who's just grown up, you know, was picked on, was, you know, just had these encounters with people at home, being yelled at. And over time, see, the amygdala continues to store those memories. So now this guy has his hair, you know, pin trigger around feeling disrespected. So anything that remotely looks, smells, appears like he's being disrespected. Mm. He just will fly off the handle in a way you're going, what just happened? So let's say that guy was in that line of cars this morning as I was driving to work, you know, and so construction, big long line of cars, one open lane that, you know, everybody's shifted out of, and then there's three or four people that just drive that thing and just tick everybody off. So how do you think that guy is interpreting that? So his
personally,
eyes see the car coming up. He's been waiting in line for 5 minutes, and all of a sudden that amygdala is the one that takes over. And basically what's underneath that is all these stored memories, emotions, disrespect for that guy is one of them. So he might, you know, yell, scream, pull his car out to block, you know, all because it perceives that now he's being disrespected, and then amygdala is saying, you got to fight or flight, man. You can't allow that to happen.
You know, this really goes back to something you say regularly on this show as far as taking care of our hearts. Because I know even for me, when I hit that point with my husband, we laugh about it now, but when I started to really get into the things with the Lord about what was going on in my heart, my responses looked different, even though his behavior didn't change for a while. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Where I could respond in a Christ-like way. And so this really does go back. I mean, I don't want to get ahead of us because we're going to talk about steps we can take to calm ourselves. But it just sort of came to me, Greg, that it goes back to the importance of caring for our hearts and how our past affects us, how our present affects us, because we really, it's a stewardship thing. I mean, we really set ourselves up for a bad moment, and the enemy's got our number, and he knows what circumstances need to line up to set us up, doesn't he? So it could actually be a trap, this amygdala hijack, if we're not caring for some of these issues that surround our lives.
Yeah, if we stay completely unaware of how previous issues and experiences have really impacted us, you know, so for like that guy, if he never gets that awareness that, you know what, disrespect is a big thing for me. And boy, when I feel it, I go off. You know, for me, it's failure. You know, that my amygdala stored memories. And now, and again, I don't want to too over-spiritualize this, but I do believe that we have an adversary, kill, steal, and destroy,
that's
father
right.
of lies. And I think what he does is that he wants to exaggerate those sensitive emotions that we begin to store and turn those things into lies. People will always disrespect you. You know, that, you know, I don't know what
mine
the issue
is safety.
Was.
It's safety.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. So no, you will never be safe. You know, for me, you're always gonna fail. For the other guy, people always disrespect you. And so I think we buy into that. We just become very sensitive. So we're carrying around these wounds in our amygdala, storing those emotional memories around those wounds.
Isn't that amazing? It stores around those wounds. When we come back, we'll hear one more clip from Dr. Greg Smalley. Then we'll hear from Dr. Gary Chapman about how to manage anger. More great content in just a moment. Every time I'm in this place. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Having an interesting conversation with Dr. Greg Smalley. Actually, the clips you're hearing from a past interview, but so important. Just a little bit, Dr. Gary Chapman will join me to talk about anger. Right now, we're talking about the amygdala hijack, and this is a physiological response. We have an amygdala in our brain. When things trigger us, emotions maybe that we've not dealt with or past experiences, and we're triggered, sometimes we have a reaction that is way bigger than the situation. In this last clip we're going to hear from Greg, there's something you can do about it, okay? There are things you have a choice in the matter, even though it feels like you don't. Let's listen into this last clip.
Susie, you are an exercise guru, so you could probably explain the physiology behind this, but I know the more we exercise something, that muscle memory takes over. It just, you know, just right. It we respond then without really even thinking about it.
Well, this is just the wonder of our human body is it'll respond to the most consistent messages you send it. Your brain does that. Your body does that. All your systems do that. So if you're regularly, you know, choosing to respond in kind ways, if you're regularly choosing to exercise, your body actually, all the systems work to support your most consistent choice, negative or positive. And I think that is fascinating. So if you give yourself liberties, I would think, in this situation to respond however you want, it's almost like you've paved a trail to get there easier the next time.
That's the exact right explanation. So if every time my amygdala gets triggered, and I allow myself just to scream and vent and get angry or just sit there and weep and bawl that thing out. I mean, whatever we do, you're right. Then there's muscle memory there in your body. You're just going to do that. That's that knee jerk. Your doctor hits you,
instinctive
your
response.
Knee with the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Your leg's going to kick out.
Mm-hmm.
But I like what you're saying. So either it's either going to be we keep feeding it the negative, or we're going to choose, well, there is another way to do this. And I wanted to set it up that way just to say that this isn't a one-time thing. You can't just like, oh, that makes sense. Okay, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, you have to really work at this and over time. So let's just say, hey, let's give it a year. I mean, come on. Let's just say, hey, let's start doing this differently now. And then next fall, boy, that muscle memory is really going to allow me to do something differently. So here's what I think you've got to do. I think when that amygdala gets triggered, and we all know what that feels like, right? I mean, your breathing gets, you know, heavier, the heart rate goes up, you know, you're flush, that big vein in your temple, thump, 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 thump. I mean, whatever mm-hmm. it is. And so that's what you're first trying to do is you've got to put yourself into a timeout. Okay, we do that to our kids. It's not a good idea to put your spouse in timeout, but we can put ourselves in timeout. As a matter of fact, my very favorite verse, all right, is Matthew 7:2-5. Remember, that's the one that says, "You hypocrite, why do you look at the dust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the what? To the log, to the plank in your own eye." And it's such a cool verse because it literally says first. So it's telling us first get the log out of your own eye. So in other words, before I deal with that other person or you know, react in whatever way, I need to deal with me. I think the best thing we do is just call a timeout. In other words, we've got to hit the pause button. We've got to give ourselves a little bit of space to allow your thinking, rational part of your brain to reengage, to go, now what really should I do with this? So I'm in this long line of traffic. There's a car coming up. It's disrespectful and, you know, whatever. Before I wave with certain fingers, what if I just sat back and just went, whoa. All right, what's going on here? Because I think if you just create a little bit of distance, space, time for you, the next place, see what you're trying to, so as the exercise person, Susie, what you're trying to do is train, exercise your mind. The next place then is, what just happened? What is the emotion that was just triggered? Remember, your amygdala is all that emotional part of your brain. So try to put a feeling word to whatever's going on. Boy, that just right there, that guy zooming past as I'm waiting in this line, how disrespectful.
I was just going to say that it's so fascinating when you make that parallel because it makes it so understandable for me, because when your body responds, your body does respond to the most consistent choice that you make. So you look at, we all have a pattern of response in the way that we think, the way that we speak, the way that we react. But so your body helps you respond that way, actually making it harder to respond the other way.
Yes.
So if you're consistently responding the right way, it's actually harder to respond the wrong way and vice versa. And I was thinking as you're talking, there's a proverb that says, a man who has control of his anger has more power than a man who rules a city. Isn't that interesting?
We could
really unpack that, couldn't we? When you think about when you've learned how to rein this in, you've really got quite a gift and a virtue in your character.
Yeah, you know, you don't have power and control over your amygdala. Now, you can do work. You could go to a therapist. You could talk a lot of this emotional stored memory and, you know, if it's been a traumatic thing. So, I mean, you could become a little bit less sensitive, but not going to a therapist, I was going to say, is a waste of time. What's a waste of time is trying to figure out how to keep people from pushing your buttons or activating your amygdala. It's how God designed you. Don't worry about that. Just do what you're saying, Susie, which is train your body to respond in a different way. And I'm telling you that there's something powerful when you put a name to how you're feeling. It begins to calm your emotions down. There's something about that awareness and that insight that just that you know, where David prayed, God, you know, the secrets of my heart may be laid bare. There's a way in which when we put a name to something, it just calms us down. Now, here's what's cool. Okay, as believers, all right, I know that I'm not the source of truth. And so the next step is, once you've sort of called this quick little timeout, I put a name to how I'm feeling. I just, in this situation, when my boss said this, I get so mad. I felt like a failure. So before I say something to my boss, God, what's the truth?
We're going to talk to Dr. Gary Chapman up next. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. And if you just tuned in, I'm going to be talking to Dr. Gary Chapman here in just a moment. First half hour, we talked to Dr. Greg Smalley. Actually played some clips from a past interview I had with him talking about the amygdala hijack. And you may wonder, what in the world am I talking about? But you ever have those times when you sort of blow a gasket, when you lose your cool and you react where your emotions are kind of running the show and you think later, what was that? It's an amygdala hijack. And Greg spent some time unpacking that and how the more often we react to our emotions and let them dictate when we have those meltdowns, the easier it is to go there again and again, and the harder it becomes to control those emotional times. And great insight, great information. One of the things he said is when you get to that place, one of the best things you can do is identify the emotion that you're feeling. I'm feeling disrespected. I'm feeling afraid. I'm feeling dismissed. As soon as you identify it, your emotions actually will tone down. And the best thing, if you have the presence of mind to do it, is to say, God, what's true? This feels true. What is true? And you will train your brain to react and respond, especially when your emotions are rising up within you. Such important information. We're going to continue this conversation talking specifically about anger. Our good friend, Dr. Gary Chapman, New York Times bestselling author many times over of the five love languages, has got a new book titled Anger, Taming a Powerful Emotion. Let me tell you about him. We'll get this conversation started. Dr. Gary Chapman is author and speaker with over 30 years of counseling experience. He's best known for the number one New York Times bestselling book, Five Love Languages. You can find Dr. Chapman's other resources and his author page on our website at myfaithradio.com. Dr. Chapman, so good to have you with us again today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Susie. It's good to be back.
Always good to have you on the show. I'd love to know what the catalyst was for you to tackle this book, Anger, Taming a Powerful Emotion. Is it something that kind of crept up in your practice with people you were counseling? People asked you to do this? How did this come about?
You know, I encounter anger almost on a weekly basis with people that I'm working with. But in my own experience, many, many years ago, you know, Susie, to be honest with you, I didn't have much trouble with anger until I got married.
Not always the case.
And I didn't get really super angry until I had a teenage son.
There you go.
And so I had to learn how to handle my own anger, you know, many years ago. And so I'm very empathetic with people who lash out, you know, and do things that are destructive because unless you get help, you know, unless you learn how to handle anger in a better way, it can be very, very destructive.
Wow. And you even say that anger is actually a cluster of emotions. I think that's even helpful to know. Unpack that, if you would, a bit more.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, anger is a kind of a bundle of emotions. It's often it's hurt is involved, disappointment is involved, frustration is involved. There can be all kind of emotions around it. But essentially, anger is that emotion that arises inside of us when in our minds either we have been mistreated or someone else has been mistreated. It's stimulated when our sense of right is violated. And so I think if we understand where anger comes from, that's probably the first step in deciding, well, how am I going to handle this? Because as you know, Susie, a lot of Christians think it's wrong to feel anger. You should never feel anger if you're a Christian. And the Bible does say get rid of anger, you know, but it doesn't say anger is a sin. You know, Ephesians 4:26 says, being angry, sin not. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Neither give place to the devil. I mean, that's a powerful verse, you know.
Yeah.
It essentially begins by saying when you are angry. God knows we all get angry. God himself gets angry. So when you're angry, be careful. Don't sin. And so it's important for us to learn how to handle anger. Otherwise, our response to anger can be very destructive in any relationship.
Well, isn't it when you think about it, it seems like an explosive that needs to be diffused at these varying degrees. But so it goes somewhere if you don't diffuse it. So if you think you're not supposed to get angry because it's not Christian, it's not kind, it will implode within you. I mean, you've seen that. You referenced that in the book, where there are people who come in with who've endured really injustices that are legitimate cause for anger and really would merit sorting through. But in them telling themselves, I don't get to be angry about this, it's wreaked all kinds of havoc within them. I want you to speak to that kind of implosion that happens if you think you're not supposed to get angry.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And many Christians pride themselves on, they say, well, I don't get angry. And it doesn't mean they don't get hurt. They'll use the word hurt. I do get hurt, but I don't get angry. And so what happens is they hold that anger inside. And when you hold anger inside, it turns to bitterness and then hatred. And both of those are sinful. I mean, the Bible condemns bitterness and hatred. So, and I think that's why in the Ephesians 4 verse that I read earlier, he said, get rid of anger before dark. Don't let the sun go down on your anger. Anger was designed to be a visitor, not a resident, not designed to live inside of us, designed to stimulate us to take constructive action to try to deal with whatever we think is wrong. So learning how to process anger rather than holding anger inside is the biblical challenge.
And that, and then the flip side of that, giving constant vent, thinking you you're at the mercy of your anger. If you're angry, you have a right to be. And so anything goes when you're angry. What I've learned, I'm not the expert, so I want you to comment on it, but it seems as we let ourselves go there again and again, it's easier to go there again and again. What do you say?
Yeah, it's like any pattern, whether it's a positive or a negative pattern. The more you do it, the more it becomes who you are. And if you simply follow your emotions, you know, you get angry and then you either lash out in harsh words or you get physical, you throw things, you push people, then that pattern will get developed in you. That's why I say to young couples, for example, if after you get married, your spouse in anger hits you or shoves you or just lashes out in anger with you, the earlier you can say to them, you know, honey, I love you very much, but I cannot accept that kind of behavior. We have got to get help. You're either going with me to a counselor or I'm going by myself because I cannot live with that. You just let it be known that this is not appropriate behavior because that person has just never learned how to handle their anger, and the earliest time to do it in the marriage is the first time it occurs.
Excellent, excellent. We got a listener who just emailed and said, can you explain the role of the Holy Spirit, giving us power to respond in a godly way? While it's so important for us to take accountability for our actions and try to change, isn't it also true that without the power of the Spirit through our salvation, we can't do the things you're talking about? Thanks so much for the ministry and the program. It's a great encouragement to so many every day. Thank you for that great question. Gary, what do you say to that?
Well, I think the listener's right.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot follow the commands of Jesus, the teachings of the Bible, without the power of the Holy Spirit. By nature, all of us are self-centered. Our way is the right way. Mm. And when we get angry, we feel like, you know, I'm angry because I should be angry. You got to listen to me. You got to change your behavior. Oh, you know, we can't control all of that without the help of God. But I think God will help us if we ask for his help. The Bible's clear about it. And if we ask for his help in handling anger, he will help us handle anger. And I think there are a lot of ways that we can do that. You know, we reach out for help. One thing is to learn how to call a timeout. You know, rather than just doing what I normally do, just say, Lord, help me to remember the next time I get angry to call timeout, which means I'm saying to the other person, you know, I'm going to have to take a timeout because I'm getting hot. And you take a walk. Then you come back and say, okay, I think I'm under control. Is this a good time to talk about this? And now you're more likely to talk about it rather than scream at each other or yell at each other. So we have to learn, and God guides us, in ways to do that. One lady told me, she said, Dr. Chapman, I decided that when I got angry, I asked God to help me, you know, think, and what I decided to do was to go water my flowers. So she said, the first summer I tried that, I almost drowned my petunias.
That's hilarious. Way to go for it, though. My goodness. I'd love to know, if you don't mind, from your own life, how you over the years have identified your triggers and then how your response to anger has evolved. I'd love to know just how, if and how things have changed for you over the years, Dr. Chapman.
Well, you know, as I said, when I really experienced anger that was uncontrollable is with my teenage son. And never forget the night we got into it, and I was giving it to him, and he was giving it to me, and I said harsh things, and he said harsh things. He was probably 15, and in the middle of all that interaction, he walked out of the house, slammed the door, and walked outside. And when he did, I woke up, and I said, oh, God, I thought I was further along than this. And I just sat down on the couch and wept, and my wife came in and tried to console me. And she said, you know, Gary, that's not your fault. He started that. He should not be allowed to talk to you that way. He's very disrespectful. But she finally gave up because it's hard to console a sinner. I knew I was wrong, you know. And so I just told God, you know, Lord, forgive me. I've blown it here with my son, and I need your help. And I know you'll forgive me, but I've got to learn a new way. Help me here. And so eventually my son walked back in that night, and I said, Derek, could we talk a minute, buddy? And he came in, and I said, Derek, I want to apologize to you. I said, a father should never talk to a son the way I talk to you. And I know I said some harsh things, and that's not the way I feel about you. I love you. and I know that I hurt you, and I'm really sorry, and I want to ask you to forgive me. And he said, Dad, that wasn't your fault. I started that. And when I was walking up the road, I asked God to forgive me, and I want to ask you to forgive me.
Mm.
You can imagine, we held and hugged and cried. And after that, I said to him, you know, Derek, why don't we try together to try to learn how to handle anger? And so the next time you get angry with me, you just come and say, Dad, I'm angry. Can we talk? And I'll sit down and talk with you. And I'll do the same with you. And let's see if we can learn how to do this without yelling and screaming. Let's just try to hear each other, and let's try to resolve it. So that was the beginning. That was the beginning of our changing the whole pattern of learning how to handle anger. And I think, you know, for parents, we have to acknowledge that, you know, when we lose our temper, we need to apologize. Some people say, well, want your children to disrespect you. No, no, no. They will respect you. They already know what you did was wrong. And when you apologize, you're teaching them you know, how to apologize.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that story. And as you just laid out in that story, you give some points on how to handle anger, take loving action, seek to stop the evil, redeem the evildoer. So taking loving action and seeking to stop the evil, that communicates such a word picture for me, because I think anger can have this force. It's almost like this current. And it's like we have to turn and stop the current. Otherwise, we can be swept away by it. So give some examples of taking loving action right in the middle of an angry conflict like the one you were in.
I think, as I said a moment ago, I think the first thing is to take a time out.
Yeah.
Because if you don't take time out, you're likely going to say something or do something that's going to make the situation worse. So I think you take your time out, and while you're walking around the block, you ask yourself, you know, what stimulated my anger? Why am I angry? Is it what they said? Is it the way they said it? Is it the way they're looking at me? One husband said, Doc Jamin, it's the way she looks at me. She gives me an evil look, and I just get, my stomach just knots up inside. You know, what is it? What stimulated this? And the other thing we're asking is, did the person sin against me? Did they do wrong? Because we have two kinds of anger. We have what I call definitive anger. Somebody wronged us, or they wronged someone else, and we should be angry. That's when God is angry. But we also have a lot of distorted anger. We get angry when someone didn't do it the way we wanted it done, or they didn't do what we thought they should have done. And that kind of anger is very different. It's a self-centered anger. And so we're asking ourselves while we're walking around the block, you know, what kind of anger is this? I mean, did they sin against me, or is it I just didn't get my way? And both of them need to be dealt with. You can deal with the latter on the other side of the block. You can say to God, Lord, forgive me for getting so bent out of shape over something so small. Now help me as I go back and try to talk to my spouse or whomever and try to maybe negotiate something that will make this better for us. But forgive me for feeling that I was right and they were wrong, because I realize they didn't sin against me.
And you think about that. If the bent is always to get your way and you throw your fit, and so the response is always for the spouse to try to meet you so you can get your way, in due time, you have what you call a dysfunctional relationship. I would like to talk about that on the other side, Dr. Chapman, of just how to process this stuff so we are walking in love and are really speaking each other's love language to each other. Talking to Dr. Gary Chapman. More with him in a moment. Thanks for listening today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Honored to have Dr. Gary Chapman on the show again today, celebrating another new book for him titled Anger, Taming a Powerful Emotion. And you made a great insight before the break that there is a legitimate kind of reason for anger when you've been sinned against, but then there's a distorted view of anger when you're just not getting your way. And I'm just curious, Dr. Chapman, because I hear this from women at times, and I'm sure it goes the other way too, where women can throw their hissy fits. But what I hear from women at times is they've developed a bad pattern in marriage. They dance around their husband's anger. It's like a different kind of codependency. Maybe it is codependency, but kind of like the addict, where we don't want to trip him up. And so we kind of do the dance as if the goal is to not get him tripped up by his anger. But that isn't exactly the scenario you want to have. I mean, what do you say to a person like that that's caught themselves in a dysfunction around anger?
Well, I think, you know, in marriage, we're to be helping each other grow. And none of us are perfect, and we all have to learn in certain areas. So I think a wife, or husband for that matter, who's living with a spouse that can't control anger or doesn't control anger, I think we need to openly say, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, but I am deeply hurt, I'm discouraged, I'm frustrated. I feel like that our relationship is not authentic because I just kind of avoid certain things because I'm afraid you're going to get angry and lash out at me. And so in those areas, I just feel like there's a lot of distance between us. And I don't know if you're open to learning or you want to learn or you want things to be better or not, but I really would like for things to be better. So, you know, I'm going to make two suggestions. One, we could either sit down and read a book together. You know, we'll read a chapter a week on anger and talk about it. Or we could go see a counselor and let them help us. I just believe we don't have to live this way. I believe we could have a much deeper relationship than we have. And I don't know. I'll give you, you can think about it if you want to, but I'm asking you, let's do something to make our marriage better. You know, that kind of approach leaves them with an option.
Yeah.
To say, yes, I'll try this or I'll try that, or to say, no, the problem is you. And if they say the problem is you, then you say, okay, then I'm going to go for counseling. If I'm the problem, I'm going to go for counseling. And you go for counseling.
Yeah.
And you share with the, you know, with the counselor what's going on and let them help you develop a pattern on how you might influence your spouse to join you in the counseling process.
Boy, that's just excellent. So going back to these ideas that, that one is maybe you're angry because somebody actually really sinned against you, or two, you're angry because you just didn't get your way, and you can find a way to say, well, that's sinful. I should get my way. But truly, if they boil it down to go, okay, this just didn't go the way I wanted it to, and I'm mad about it, how did they process it differently than the person who's been legitimately sinned against?
I think you process it with God first and acknowledge to God that it's self-centeredness. But then I do think you go back and talk with your spouse or whomever it is that's angered you, stimulated your anger. You go back and talk with them about the situation and try to negotiate something that will make the situation better for you. You know, I remember in the early years of our marriage, I would get angry about the way my wife loaded a dishwasher. You know, I mean, I'm organized, okay? I just believe you ought to organize it in the dishwasher. Well, she loaded the dishwasher like she was playing Frisbee, you know? I mean, and the things wouldn't get clean, and things would get broken, and I'd give her lectures, you know, God's a God of order. You,
I'm sure she loved that.
Oh, man, we had a horrible time, you know that. God was gracious to us, though. But, you know, so in that situation, it's selfish anger. It's self-centered anger. But still, I can go back after I acknowledge to God that it is self-centered anger. I can go back to her and say, honey, I'm just really irritated and upset by this. And maybe there's no answer to it. But can we talk about it? And can maybe you can suggest something to me, you know? And when my wife and I finally got around to that, you know, looking at the alternatives, she said, well, honey, I'd be happy for you to load the dishwasher.
Brilliant woman, I'm just saying.
So I started loading the dishwasher, and I've been happy ever since.
Yes, and now the world rotates as it should. That's so good.
But you can negotiate the things that irritate you and try to make life more pleasant for both of you.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's good. So when you, in your practice, when you're counseling people and those really given to anger, is this more often than not a personality trait, or is it more often than not a bad habit that's been developed?
I think it's the latter. Often they've had a pattern in one of their parents who didn't handle anger well. And so when they get angry, they tend to do what they saw their parents do. And they think it's normal because that's what their dad did. That's what their mother did. And so it gets developed over a period of time that they have this patterned way of responding to anger. And if it's negative, at some juncture, they need to wake up and realize this is not healthy. And I need to get help. And the good thing is help's available. You know, if you do a study on anger and like even reading a book, you know, or going to a counselor or talking to a friend who seems to have it together in the anger area, we can learn how to change negative patterns. We don't have to repeat what we saw in our childhood.
Here's a quote from your great book. The book, again, is titled Anger, Taming a Powerful Emotion. He writes, "Our anger is at the heart of who we are. Tell me what you're angry about, and I will tell you what's important to you." For the mature Christian, anger will focus on true injustices, unfairness, iniquity, ungodliness, not on petty personal irritations. Such anger will be tempered with a mercy and a humility, as the Christian also realizes that he or she is also capable of falling. That's just so true. When you mature, you're so much more aware of your own capacity for falling, but then your heart of compassion grows for those who suffer in ways you can't even imagine. Unpack that a bit more and really maybe issue that challenge for the person who's maybe new in their faith who wants to grow in their perspective.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when you encounter wrong, which all of us do from time to time, we need to see ourselves as agents of God in trying to correct that wrong. Well, you don't go in with a sledgehammer and start beating the person over the head. This is what's wrong with all the riots we have, you know. People sometimes have a legitimate reason to be angry, but when they get in the mob mentality and start burning stores and burning cars, they're making things worse. They're not handling their anger in a constructive way. So when you have legitimate anger, the question is, Lord, how can I approach this? What can I do here to right this wrong? And the biblical pattern is you lovingly confront the person who sinned against you. Jesus said that in Luke 17, and it's also repeated in Galatians 6:1. So we're to go lovingly confront. And it might sound something like this. You know, maybe I misunderstood what you said or what you did, and that's why I want to talk about this, because to be honest with you, I'm feeling angry, and I value our relationship, and so I want to share with you what I think you said, and please explain it to me if I missed it, because I really am hurting over this. So the person gets a chance then to share with you their perspective. You know, you give them your perspective. Now they have a chance to share your perspective, because you went in a loving way, realizing that maybe you did have a wrong perception about it. And most of the time when you take that approach, the person will either give you a different perspective that'll help you understand you did misunderstand, or they will say, you know, I'm sorry, what I did was wrong. And I hope you'll forgive me, because I value our relationship too. And you can get the thing resolved. So either way, you know, whether they confess or whether they give you a different perspective, the anger subsides. And now it's served a good purpose. Now the relationship can go forward.
And how about the situations where you maybe can't get the person to understand and you simply have to let go? God's grace is there too, right? To be able to do that.
Absolutely.
So you can walk free?
Absolutely. You know, the Bible says in Matthew 18, you go three different times. You go by yourself and confront them. If they don't respond, you take somebody with you. If they don't respond, you tell somebody at the church, let the church representative go with you. And then if they don't repent of their wrong, it says you treat them as a pagan. You release them to God. And how do we treat pagans? We pray for pagans. We're kind to pagans. We love pagans. And the biblical challenge is you return good for evil. Mm-hmm. And all of that God can use to touch their heart and bring them to a place of repentance. But we don't allow that anger to stay inside and brood. We release it to God.
Love that you said even how we treat pagans, because so many people think we shun them. It's like, no, we don't. We pray for them and love them. Well, I appreciate this. Time's gone by so fast. Wondering if you would pray for that person listening who realizes they've got stored up unforgiveness and anger in their soul. Would you pray for that person?
Yeah. Father, thank you for your word that speaks so clearly to all the issues of life. And I do pray for that person who's struggling with managing their anger. Father, give them a new perspective on the source of anger and the kinds of anger. And give them wisdom on how to respond and to break patterns of the past. And for those who are hurting because they've been wronged, I pray you'd give them the courage to lovingly confront the other person, seeking reconciliation. And Father, for those who've had that anger stored up for so long, may they today release all of the anger to you and release the people to you, and then learn how to handle it.
Amen. Dr. Chapman, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Susie. Good to be with you.
And with you. Title again of his book is Anger, Taming a Powerful Emotion. You've been listening to Live the Promise. In just a bit, you'll find the podcast of today's program on our website, myfaithradio.com. Bless your day. We'll meet you back here next time.